Welcome to Social Media Know-How, the podcast featuring the greatest minds and brands in the world of social and digital marketing. And now, your host, founder and CEO of Link Humans, Jorgen Sundberg.
Hey, Sun Space Home, and welcome to the Link Humans podcast. I am your host, Jorgen Sundberg, and this is the podcast where we talk all things digital, social, mobile, you name it, we'll talk it. Which is the second week of July 2016. My birthday is very imminent. And this week, we're going to talk to an old friend of mine, an old friend of this podcast, in fact, is social selling expert Tim Hughes. So I interviewed him about a year ago, and it was actually one of the most listened to and read, actually, podcast episodes ever. So I know this is going to be really interesting. So stay tuned for my chat with Tim Hughes coming up in just a couple of minutes. First of all, though, I just wanted to encourage you to get in touch. Feel free to send me an email at jorgen@linkhumans.com or tweet us at linkhumans. If you have any pitches for content or just ideas or any questions, just feel free to get in touch. Before we roll the interview with Tim, let's first have a little listen to our tip of the week. So this week's tip of the week comes to us courtesy of Ruby Lowe. What you got for us, Ruby?
So I wanted to let everyone know about Pokemon Go, the new app on the App Store, which is sweeping social media and everyone's going mad for it. So yeah.
Okay, so Pokemon Go, what's it all about?
So it uses augmented reality and also the location setting on your phone, and it lets you catch Pokemon in real life locations. And it's pretty cool.
Okay, so I don't quite understand either Pokemon or Pokemon Go, but I've seen screen grabs and it's basically, it looks like augmented reality. So you look in your camera on your phone and you can see these Pokemon characters on the streets,
yeah,
or in
exactly.
Shops.
Yeah. So it uses a combination of your camera and your location settings, and it uses that to create this Pokemon world.
Right, and the internet is going crazy for it.
Absolutely crazy for it. So I think it's been trending on social media, and lots of people are saying how great it is for not even being a really cool app and great for Pokemon lovers, but also really good for people with mental health and issues with leaving the house and things like that, and and it's helping them, and it's also really good for health and fitness and kind of getting a bit of movement into gaming.
So a contender to Fitbit, perhaps?
Well, I think it's maybe a slightly different app to that, but no, it's definitely good for, health-wise.
Okay, and what's the implication for marketers?
So I don't really know exactly how it's going to affect marketers, but I can see something happening along the lines of people who own businesses, such as cafes or shops, might plant Pokemon in their shops in the location, and people will be actually led to these shops. Mm-hmm. However, I don't know how happy Pokemon Go would be with that happening, but we'll see in the future.
So could it be like the new Foursquare, basically?
Something like that, I think.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay, and so where can our listeners find Pokemon Go?
So, Pokemon Go is available on the App Store and also Google Play on Android. It's currently not available in the UK, but it's available in America and a few other places that I can't think of off the top of my head.
I think it was Australia.
Yeah, Australia and somewhere else too. So, hopefully coming to UK soon.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that, Ruby Lowe.
Thank you.
There we have it, folks. Pokemon is go, go, go. And with that, let's go, go, go to our interview with social selling expert Tim Hughes. Tim Hughes, how are you doing?
Hi, Jorgen. I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day today.
Fantastic.
In London.
And it's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's lovely to be welcomed back. Thank you.
Yeah, we spoke about a year ago. So
we did.
Tell the our listeners who didn't hear you last time around, what is it that you do?
So I'm a, I don't like to use the word expert, but people quite often place that on me. I'm an expert in social selling and social media. I've been involved in social media now for 7 years, and I was involved in a project to roll out social selling 3 years ago, and I've been blogging on that and writing about social selling now for 3 years. And my book comes out, it's actually on pre-order now on Amazon, and it will ship on the 3rd of July in the UK. So really exciting times.
Yeah, so can you tell us about the new book and how did it come about?
Yeah, so the book is called Social Selling, Techniques for Influencing Buyers and Changemakers. And it came about really, it's what all of the things that I've been doing over 7 years has gone down into that book. So I'm just approaching 150,000 followers on Twitter. And I quite often get asked, how do you get 150,000 followers on Twitter? Well, if you read my book and you implement what I talk about in there, you should be on your way to getting Twitter followers of a large amount. The book really is how organizations, how salespeople and how marketers can use social to sell and use social to in effect to generate leads and generate revenue. The book isn't about personal branding. One of the things that when Matt and I pitched the book to our publisher Kogan Page, they did a lot of research and they went out and they said, well, there's about 5 books on personal branding. If it's about personal branding, we're not interested. And that was kind of a defining moment for me, because it wasn't about, and it wouldn't be about personal branding. It's about how you can use influence, community, work with a connected economy, and the way that society has changed, and how you use all those things to enable you to connect with people, connect with buyers early on, and ultimately sell deals.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but in my experience, the term personal branding doesn't really appeal to managers and organizations, because it's not really... Well, it's personal branding, so as opposed to the organization. And
I totally agree. You can set up a buyer-centric profile on LinkedIn and Twitter, but it doesn't really get you anywhere, because what you've got to do is actually that you've either got to find people that want to buy things, or you need to be found. And just changing your job title and having a color picture on your LinkedIn profile isn't going to do that.
No. Which leads me on to my first question here. How do you use social networks purposefully to build social trust and I guess to create a high quality community?
I think that the thing that's changed, and we've talked about this, and there's lots of articles about this, about the way that society has changed, the fact that now people are using mobile more than anything else, and people are spending more time actually researching things. So there's some research that came out recently from the marketing agency, the Octopus Group, which actually shows that sales cycles or buying cycles are getting longer, because people are spending more time actually researching the products, and there's far more products and apps, and the whole thing is getting far more complex.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh.
But the actual sales cycle is getting shorter.
Ah, right.
And I don't want to sound ageist, but their research shows that if you're looking at people up to about the age of 40. Those people generally, about 35% of them, rather than go to Google when they want to actually buy something and then go to a corporate website, people are actually going and connecting onto the social networks. So they're looking at social media, and they're looking at Twitter, and they're looking at LinkedIn, rather than necessarily taking Google or going to a particular brand's website. But it's an age thing in the way that people are doing that. Just in case people are looking at it and listening to this and saying, I always go to the website. You know, it can be different people in different places will use different things, but it looks like people are starting to use social as the way of kicking off that purchasing or that the reviewing process.
And how do you build this social trust? Would you then create content to resonate with those people doing research?
Yes. I mean, a lot of people come to me and say, Tim, you post some really interesting stuff. And for me, that's a really flattering thing, because what I want to do is educate people. And that's what brands, salespeople and marketers should be doing. So if we think about the traditional sales funnel and the way that people have traditionally sold, or is that you've probably already spoken to the people. There's already a lead. There would have been a meeting, and you take that person through a process where, say, you're selling software. You'll do demonstrations and reference visits, and it's all very defined, and you follow that process. What we're talking about here is above the sales funnel. And I don't know whether there should be a new term, whether it's the marketing funnel, or I actually call it the relationship funnel, which is where the people that we're trying to sell or market to probably don't know about us already, or they may in a position that, it's even above that, where they don't even know that there's not even a need for anything that we do. And what your role in the way that you can use social is to build a community and network with those individuals. So when they actually come out and buy, they actually come to you, because what you would have done is that you would have nurtured them. Say, for example, you find somebody that a contact, connect with them on LinkedIn, and then nurture them. And you do that just by putting out content that is interesting. And by the time they actually want to buy, what they will have done is that they'll think, oh, Tim Hughes, he's an interesting guy. He knows all about this subject. I'll go and have a conversation with Tim and see what his opinion is. And from a particular and from a sales perspective, if you're a good salesperson, the fact that person's come to you, then you could actually close them down before the competition.
Yeah.
And certainly one of the things that I always tell people, especially around using LinkedIn and Twitter, is that unless you're getting inbound, so people are coming to you and saying, what I just said, that's interesting, Tim, we're thinking about buying this, or, can you come and talk to about this? If that's not happening, you're probably not doing it right.
Yeah, yeah.
And you need to be, personal branding's kind of interesting, but you need to be using it for your own competitive advantage and your own ability to create stuff. And you said something earlier on about sales and marketing leaders. I think the feedback I always get, and I sit in a lot of meetings with sales and marketing leaders, where they say, Tim, social selling and personal branding is all very well, but where's the leads? I've taken out any swear words. because that's what, at the end of the day, every single organization, whether it's, biggest or smallest, what you're looking for is leads or meetings, and you're looking to do deals and you're looking to make money. And having, it's great having a great LinkedIn profile, but let's use that as a way of generating your own influence, generating your own community, and making sure that you're there when people come and buy.
Yeah, well, it is funny, because when you put out content, you connect with people, they follow you. You can put out content for years and years, and you never hear from them. They're lurking. But then suddenly, when they're ready to buy, they come out of the woodwork and they go, I've been reading your stuff religiously every week. And you just go, wow, why, you never told me.
I know, I get that. I actually get that quite a lot. And this guy likes my article, and I went to him and said, thanks, and can we connect? And he said, I've been following you for like years. It's like, well, you should have come and said hello, the chats that we have and these podcasts. I get people 18 months later said, I listened to that podcast. It was really interesting. Can we connect? So I'm kind of saying, so if you're listening to this and you've got an interesting story to tell, or you're using social, come and talk to us.
Yeah. And I think likewise as well, when you see someone who's highly influential with millions of followers in a particular subject, they don't get as many connection requests and questions as you would think, because I will interact with people on Twitter and they typically will reply.
Yes. So I go through my Twitter every single evening, and I I get asked about all kinds of, you know, what apps to use. I do an awful lot of it manually because I want to maintain the authenticity, and I want to maintain the fact that someone can have a conversation with me. And that's actually one of the great things about social is that, you know, I was presenting yesterday to a whole bunch of board directors. They were actually quite social, and some of them are on Twitter. And what you're able to do is actually go to those people, and as long as you're not weird or you're not spammy, you can actually have conversations with board members of UK and US and many other companies. Whereas if you used a telephone, you'd never get through to them.
Yeah, good point. And talking about social and digital channels, which ones work best? I'm thinking LinkedIn and Twitter, perhaps.
So the two that I always recommend that people, especially if they're working in a B2B environment, are LinkedIn and Twitter. And Brian Solis said that everybody's on LinkedIn, but the interesting people are on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you need to be on, if I'm talking to salespeople and marketeers, you need to be on Twitter, not just about because you're putting out information, but because that's actually where, and in our book, we talk about, we use this term called change makers, which is a particular type of person in an organization. And change makers generally will be on Twitter. They will definitely be on LinkedIn, but you can find individuals, they're not C-level, but they will be on Twitter, and you can find them in organizations, and they're kind of your link in to the way that you can sell into those organizations.
Yeah, well, I find people on Twitter are suddenly intellectually curious, and they have a need for information and so on. So yeah, it's a good level of conversation there. What do you think of other new channels such as Snapchat, which I think you're fairly active on as well, or Instagram even?
Because I'm in social, I have to pretty much use every platform.
Yeah.
Because I get asked opinions about it. I actually like the movement away from text to pictures and video.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a Instagram, you know, is all about photos. And I think, you know, I love walking around. I walk around London and I go, right, I'm going to take a photo of that and then put it on Instagram. And the same with Snapchat. I mean, Snapchat's a great fun way of taking very small segment, you know, videos and putting those out. And the thing about Snapchat that I hadn't really realized until I met up with Brian Fanzo a couple of weeks ago in Manchester, and he was saying that the great thing about it is that you can have a one-to-one chat with a brand, whereas on Twitter, generally, if you're dealing with a brand, it goes out to everybody. So from a brand perspective, if you've got a customer and they're actually working with you on Snapchat, and I did a radio interview the other week, and we were talking about how small businesses can use Snapchat, even accountancy companies. It's just about how you tell the story and you work out the content. But what you're able to do is you're able to have that. The person, if someone likes what you're doing, they're able to go back to you, and it is one-to-one.
Yeah, it's definitely one to watch, and we'll see where it heads. But it's certainly the one platform everyone's talking about. And if we look further at technology, especially for social selling, so LinkedIn, would you say it's Sales Navigator, that product, is that a must-have for a social salesperson?
If you're in sales, you've basically got to take the professional edition, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's cheaper. Was it something £300 or so a year? But if you're in sales, you kind of need that. And it's great for, you know, if you've got some accounts, actually finding those people and finding things up about those accounts. I know that you can go to websites like Fiverr, and you get some people to actually, you know, you could go give me a list of. As a salesperson, you could say, here's my target list of 20 accounts. I'll pay you £5 and you can go and research, you know, all the people in those accounts with these job titles. And you probably would get somebody on Fiverr to do that. But I actually like spending the time going in and actually doing the research, because you'll find other people, because, you know, it's not just about finding the people, but it's also about, I didn't know that, you know, a good friend of mine knows this person in the organization. Right. So rather than having to phone them up, what I'll do is I'll go to Peter and I'll ask Peter to basically introduce me. Or, you know, if you're dealing with big organizations, there can be all kinds of people, you know, that you'll find where it says on the right hand side, you know, people have looked at this, have looked at that, or they give you suggestions. So it's really worth the time and the investment, because you'll find and you'll get access at all kinds of different levels and find different people. Yeah. And when you're selling to big organizations, it really is about triangulation of information, which is where you ask three people the same question,
right?
Because some people will give you different, some people will give you different answers, and they may give you a different answer because there's politics there or something like that. And what you do is you can then start finding out far more about the way that the organization is. And you know, if you're selling at a high level, it's just as much about the understanding the people and the politics within that organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's the LinkedIn Sales Navigator. What about Twitter? Are there any apps or tools that you can't live without?
Well, there's a whole bunch of tools that I talk about in the book. There's actually a chapter on that.
Give us one or two.
Well, I use Crowdfire as a way of. Some social media purists won't like me saying this, but you know, I'm a sales guy, and what I'm looking to do is sell stuff. And I think sometimes I talk in the book, we talk a lot about community, and community isn't about you know, we're trying to sell stuff here, and community isn't this sort of like hippie let's get together and sit around cross-legged around a campfire. This is about using community as a way of helping sell stuff, and what we're looking to do is that, you know, why not find your competitors and find out who's following them, and because if they've got an interest in your competitor, why haven't they got an interest in you? And you know, I know, for example, people that track the marketing automation products, for example, and anybody that basically follows a marketing automation product, a competitive marketing automation product, that's basically deemed as a lead. And so there's various, you know, social media listening options that you can use to actually help you do that. And I know that probably sounds or may sound a little harsh, as I say, to the social media purists, but from a sales perspective, it's a great opportunity for you to see what's going on, what your competitors are doing, and using that as a way of actually do deals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in the book, you also talk about how to scale a social selling strategy across an organization.
Yes.
Can you talk us through that, please?
Yeah, so in the book, we've got a chapter on social media maturity, and maturity within organizations, starting off from, you know, where you get a view that, and a lot of people come to me, which is that, you know, people say, you know, I read all your articles, but my manager thinks that socials are all about, you know, it's for kids and for taking pictures of your lunch, and that you can't actually use it to sell. What can I do? And that's a very common question that I get. And it's really about how you see the way or using that chapter, you can start actually predicting the way that the organizations are going to react or work. And people that read the book, and because of that, they can actually start managing or doing the things they need to do to start going on that journey. And I don't think there's actually necessarily an accelerated route, because usually what happens is that, you know, you start off with it's all for kids, and then you get is random acts of social, which is where and this is not a bad thing, which is where people actually realize that you can use social, and what they'll do is they'll say, right, us as a small team, either one or five of us, are going to prove this out, and then what we'll do is we'll go to the management and we'll show the ROI, and then what we'll do is we'll get the stakeholder buy-in, and then that actually helps move it up the process or moves up the scale. And so that's what we talk about, and how you move from then random acts of social to actually getting stakeholder buy-in. But also what happens quite often at that stage is that when organizations realize that there's this tsunami of social taking place, is what they try and do is actually grab hold it and try and control it. So there's a number of people out there certainly who have got very quite high brands who have had to leave organizations partly because they got closed down. And the organizations just couldn't grasp that, you know, what they need are these evangelist people. And we talk about this particular the whole point of the book is not to actually talk about social necessarily in terms of theory. It's about practice. And how do organizations take this opportunity and drive it through the organization? And you know, we're quite open and honest and say you actually need particular individuals to help you do that. Because there's social selling is a strategy. It's a change program. And the only way that you're going to take it through the organization and stop people going back to the old ways, because whenever there's change, you know, none of us like change. We always like going back to what we did before. And the only way that you can do that and explain it and train people and get people to understand how to post and why you post this and why not to post that and to drive it is to have a person who understands social, who has a business acumen to drive it through the organization and take charge of that. And what I see too often is a kind of a special project. So we've got Fred and he's not really up to his job, so we'll give him the social selling job to do. And that's kind of like, you know, well, you don't really get it, do you? You know, we people then often say to me, so where do we find all these individuals? You say, well, you go on social. Because there's actually lots of people. I know big organizations that have got people that have got there's a number of people who have become friends of mine who, when we wrote this chapter, we kind of wrote and said, this is what the attributes of this social community sales community manager should look like. And it was kind of from them and the things that they did that I actually built the attributes of what this individual that should be within organizations and this is what they should look like. And I think those people should be around probably for the next 5 years, because, you know, social's constantly changing. There's, as you said, there's new platforms. You know, should we be doing streaming? Should we be doing Blab? Should we be on Instagram? Should we be doing on Snapchat? And there needs to be a certain amount of realization that let's stick to what we know, but we need to maybe do an experiment in this area. Because for some people Snapchat will work, and for some people it doesn't. But we need to have this person who heads this up, who drives it through the organization.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about employee advocacy. How do you think that relates to social selling? Is it part of it, or vice versa?
So I read a report today that says that 70% of brands online broadcast. They don't actually engage with anybody. Mm. And if you look at, certainly if I look at my LinkedIn news stream, a lot of it is corporate stuff being put out by employees. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you're IBM, you've got 400,000 employees, you connect your corporate marketing to all of those 400,000 employees, you've got an awful lot of share of voice and you're pumping out an awful lot of content. So, but you know, social isn't about broadcast and it's not about pumping out content. Social is about engaging, and social is actually about building your own influence and your own community. And if you're pumping out stuff that isn't, crap content is crap content. And I'm not saying IBM's content's crap. I'm just, you know, saying it's just a generic term. Yeah. You know, if you're putting out engaging, interesting content as an employee that can or cannot be about your company, then that's great. Andrew Griller at IBM, there's a great video of that he talks about employee advocacy. And he's been doing a lot with the, you know, a lot of the millennial people that they're taking on. And he has a, you know, he usually gets one of the those people to actually come on the stage and explain. And this one video that's out there on YouTube, you know, this girl gets on the stage and said, you know, I was out, you know, I'm working on a project. I'm in Geneva and I'm out having dinner and I tweet about it. And what that means is that you know, you'll get people going, wow, she, you know, she's in Geneva. That's brilliant. And I fancy some of that, you know, and you know, and immediately what they're doing is that IBM is able to tap into the employee advocacy of their millennials. And they're able to tap into that particular talent pool purely by this person putting out a tweet about her dinner. And other people going, yeah. And rather than, you know, putting out white papers and stuff like that. So I think there's a fine balance in employee advocacy between the pumping out of the same old corporate and content marketing material and the and actually using it as a way of, you know, recruitment or spreading the message, but doing it in an interesting and engaging way.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Well, I'm just wondering if employee advocacy is part of social selling, or is social selling part of employee advocacy? I interviewed Ed Turpening from Altimeter Group the other week.
Oh, yeah.
He said social selling is part of employee advocacy, I believe, or is it vice versa? But yeah, I guess they're very closely related.
I would, you know, if I was looking at if I was rolling out a social selling program, I would be looking at employee advocacy as a, you know, as a, you know, a second or third step in that process, because ultimately what you want in the organization is everybody, you know, the goal of all organizations should be stated that we want to move to being a social organization.
Yeah.
And that's social empowerment of every employee, whether they're in sales, whether they're in development or whatever, but doing it in the right way. Because obviously you don't want someone developing saying I'm really enjoying my job and developing this high tech, this secret app that nobody knows about. You know, you need to have people tweeting and engaging in social in a responsible way. But if you can get if you can start moving that out and this is one of the things that people start doing when as they move through their maturity is when people actually the brands or the companies realize they need to actually loosen the control, at that point you kind of can start flying, because you can, you're, if you've trained the people, they know what they can and cannot tweet, they know what the house rules are, you kind of let them go and they can then actually have a conversation and not have to use some of the white papers that people may be wanting to put out kind of as a crutch. They need to be using their, creating their own content or making their own comment. Now, if you look at the Altimeter research that came out recently about employee advocacy, what you'll find is that if you look in the detail of the report, is that actually if employees are putting out content, the view of their followers is, well, yeah, they would say that because they work there, they're biased. And what you'll find is that in that research, it actually says that I think it's only 8% of that content is actually shared. And it is only shared by their friends. Now, yeah, okay, so you're actually going out through that share, that friend's network, which is nice. But if your friend works in, you know, is in a different industry on that, it's kind of wasted. So that actual report that came out actually shows that you get little amplification, or there is little amplification at the moment going on through employee advocacy.
Yeah, and I find it surprising that I think what the most shared or the second most shared type of content was about jobs, which surely, you know, we've seen enough jobs get pumped out by recruiters and so on. So you wonder how effective that really is. And I think it also depends on the person who's in charge driving the whole program. They need to be picking the right type of content that people should be sharing. It should not just be about, you know, the white papers or the jobs. It should also be about fun stuff.
And if we talk about, you know, let's talk about, you know, in terms of the future or the way it should be now. If you think about, you know, when marketing first started off and we looked at, you know, and there was interrupt marketing, we're still kind of doing that because people are interrupting me still, but they're doing it on my LinkedIn profile. But they're also still doing it from a 1950s perspective, which is they're still talking about themselves. Hmm. You know, they're talking about their products. That they're talking about, you know, they're talking about the benefits of their products. And, you know, we moved a little bit on from the features, but it's still about that organization, how big they are, how great they are, whatever. And we're still not moving towards, you know, talking more about the customers and the benefits they've got, or even trying to, you know, pick people further up the top of the funnel. So one of the key things that we talk about in the book is the change maker, and we actually have a hashtag which is a change maker to allow people to have a conversation around the book. So there is the change maker there's a fundamental change in society. So when I was at school, I'm 51. And when I was at school, you know, there was a real hierarchy, you know, teachers, there was between teachers and children. The teachers would be on the desk right at the front, probably even on the stage. You'd have to queue up and with your homework and they would mark it. And, you know, you were standing there completely terrified. The way that society has changed is it's now got a lot flatter. And the way that you work with teachers now is that they're more of a friend or part of a team. And if you think about people who were, Google reckons change makers generally are between the age of about 28 and 35. And they're that age because they have the business acumen, but they also understand social or grew up in an age where there was texting and things. So those type of people, if they didn't understand the physics question in their homework, they could have texted their teacher and said, "Can you give me some help on that?" And so what you have is this part of society that is used to going out into their social networks and actually getting information. So it's not necessarily saying, "I want to buy a car, so I'm going on Twitter," but it's also going out and saying, I need a new telephone system. I'm looking for a new HR system. I'm looking for a new hi-fi. I'm going for a holiday in Thailand. I'm going into the Camden for a meal. Can you recommend anything? And there are lots of sites that do recommendations like TripAdvisor and that. But there are also people are going out and they're asking and they're using their networks to ask for those things. And the key thing is the reason why you need to build your own influence in your community is that you need to have those people in your community when they decide to go out and buy. Because they will either come to you or within your community, you need to have people that will basically say, "Have you thought about talking to Tim Hughes? He seems to know about social selling."
Yeah.
And that's pumping out content and measuring share of voice is kind of interesting, and so is employee advocacy. But if you've not actually built and grown those networks and built those communities when people are coming out, you're missing out. And that's the fundamental piece of the book, which is that the salespeople, marketers, and brands now need to be building that community. And you know, whether you're Pepsi or Coke or you're Paddy Power or you're Tim Hughes, the sales guy working for a company, you need to have built out those communities and you need to have that influence. And that's what you'll do is that when those people come out, they will come to you. And the critical part is that, again, I go back to what I was saying at the beginning of the interview, it's about getting inbound.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great. Well, you really want, you make me want to read the book now. Doing a good job of selling it.
I'm a salesman.
Yeah, yeah. And can you give us any examples of any organizations that inspire you in terms of social selling? Who's doing it right?
There are a lot of there's a lot of companies doing it right. I still don't think you know, it's there's still a lot. Social selling is still seen in this is in its infancy. It's still seen very much as that social selling equals LinkedIn. And there are a lot of companies that are using Sales Navigator well, and LinkedIn have done an awful lot of work over the last 2 years to get some really good ROI information out of that.
Yeah.
But I still don't think people have got the Twitter. They still haven't really worked out how to build their own influence and their own community. So it is kind of early days on it. But there are a lot of people using LinkedIn to great effect. And that's from, you know, big companies who probably call it social selling, to the little companies that I generally find now is they're using the term growth hacking. So, you can sit in, you know, Google campus in Shoreditch in London, and you can set up a startup and you can be selling stuff globally within a matter of minutes. And you can do that using growth hacking or social selling techniques, right up to, you know, you're a big global corporate organization and you need to get into the top 10 multinationals and sell.
So who's an example then? Well, IBM are pretty decent at social selling.
Yeah, there's pockets. I think with all of the major IT companies,
yeah,
they all have got pockets of stuff that they're doing. With these things, it's a change program and it's going to take time. To roll out a social selling program in something like HP could probably take 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I guess the pinnacle person must be Richard Branson in terms of being a rainmaker for the Virgin brand.
Yes, he's just amazing. Yeah. I just love the way that, and I'm not saying this happened, but you could actually do this where, you know, we sit in a meeting, we come up with some great quotes, we put them against some nice pictures and we put them out onto the internet. And whether Richard actually said them or not doesn't really matter. But you know, he's got some inspiring quotes and they just go out there. I mean, I don't know how many times I see those things posted on Facebook and they just have their own energy. And it's one of the things that CEOs and of companies can really tap into and, you know, really look at what Richard's doing. Yeah. And learn from it. You know, if you're a CEO or any leader of any organization, you've got such a great way of tapping in and telling your story. And right now, because there's so few people doing it, you know, you can, you know, T-Mobile is another great example of how they it's certainly in the States, they really kill it on social because they've got an inspiring leader who kind of knows how to use it.
There you go. Yes. Great. So final question, Tim, where can we learn more about yourself? Where can our listeners connect and where can we check out your new book?
So my book's available on Amazon. It's currently on pre-order. So in the UK, it ships on the 5th of July. In the US, I think it's towards the end of the month. There will be a Kindle edition around about the time that it ships. Basically, it's Amazon rules around with Kindle, it kind of it's an instantaneous download, so they don't allow you to pre-order Kindle editions. But there will be one. So if you go to Amazon and search, it's called Social Selling Techniques for Influencing Buyers and Changemakers. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm Timothy, which is T-I-M-O-T-H-Y, then underscore and then Hughes. And I'll spell that for you because some people find it difficult. It's H-U-G-H-E-S. Or you can, connect with me on LinkedIn. You should better find me. I'm Timothy Hughes or Tim Hughes on LinkedIn. Search for me and connect with me, and then you'll get all of my material. I also have a blog, which is thesocialsellingnetwork.com, which is, you know, one word, and I put my blog articles on there and they're also going up on LinkedIn as well.
Great. Tim Hughes, many thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, I hope you got a lot out of that interview. I certainly did. There's no denying Tim is a good salesperson. He can definitely sell sand in the Sahara, as they say. if you want to look up anything that Tim talked about today, check out linkhumans.com/podcast, which is where we do put all the show notes, all the article, the write-ups that go along with these episodes. And finally, if you haven't already, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast in the podcast app on iTunes and the Google Play Store, I believe it's called. And yeah, when you hit that subscribe button, feel free to get in touch and I would love to thank you personally. Also, if you have subscribed for a while and you're still hanging in there, you're still liking the content, how about considering leaving us a honest review? We love reviews here. I love reviews. And yeah, it's always good to get feedback. So feel free to do that. And of course, let us know once you've done that. That is it for this week. Many thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thank you for listening to Social Media Know-How with your host, Jorgen Sundberg of Link Humans. For show notes and more, go to linkhumans.com/podcast and check out the hashtag SMKnowHow.
So there's a saying that people use, which is never to suffer fools gladly. But someone once told me, they actually said, suffer fools gladly. And it's something that, you know, you're sitting in a meeting and someone actually says something and everybody else laughs. But actually, in the current climate and the way things are changing so fast and the way that things are so disruptive, we actually need people that are going to come up with weird and wacky ideas. We need people to speak up in meetings to say, have you thought about doing this? And because there's too many people that are going, you know, we need to do it the same way that we've done it before. And we need to listen to the fools. And we need to listen to what they're saying, because, you know, we might not take every idea that they have, but, you know, one in three, I think we'd probably go, actually, that's a really good idea. I mean, who would believe that lady with a Chewbacca mask would sit in a car park and, you know, gets 157 million or whatever it is likes on Facebook. These things just happen. And sometimes you're going to have to do something. I don't like using the term out of the box because it's a bit of a cliche, but sometimes you need to think really differently and that will help you.